AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
You're listening to Comedy Central.
From the most trusted journalists at Comedy Central, it's America's only source for news. This is The Daily Show with your host, Jon Stewart.
I almost surprised myself. What the heck? What is my head doing? There we go. Hey, welcome to The Daily Show. My name is Jon Stewart. Unbelievable show. They're already exhausted from the open. By the way, how was your weekend? My weekend was...
Breaking at this moment, Israel under fire from Iran.
It's just raining rockets. With those sirens blaring out.
We do effectively have World War III in progress.
Oh, no! Not World War III! I'm still writing Iraq War on all my checks. But yes, the skies above Israel were lit up like a... I want to say Christmas tree, but that's probably not... for that area. Menorah. It's the moment society has dreaded since the armistice of 1945, finally upon us. As Einstein said, he doesn't know what weapons World War III will be fought with, but he knows the next ones will be fought with sticks and stones. This is Jon Stewart signing off. May God bless us and everyone. And let future civilizations know that we could not overcome our fatal nature.
In the end, there was almost no damage, as Israel, the U.S., and other allies shot down 99% of Iran's missiles and drones.
Huh. It wasn't World War III. I certainly regret doing this. Oh, boy. Moment of panic and, I guess, sort of a primitive instinct, but... Is that me? Did I... Art Garfunkel? No. But kudos to the United States and to Israel. It shows just how effective a military defense system can be when you funnel American dollars away from healthcare and education. It really helps to build the... And the best part is, we did it with no help. The two amigos, surrounded by hostile Arab nations, united in their zeal to destroy Israel.
Jordan's Air Force also intercepted and shot down dozens of drones that violated its airspace and were on their way to Israel.
And we've now learned that Saudi Arabia and the UAE provided real-time intelligence that helped track the incoming missiles.
What are the teams in these f***ing wars? Well, I don't even know the teams anymore. The Arab countries are helping Israel. I don't know what the teams are. We need to sort this out with jerseys or something. Because Iran could attack at any moment.
In a statement, Iran said it now considers the matter concluded.
Hey, did you hear that? We're good. We're good. We don't... By the way, he was delicious. Really? That's what got you? Anyway, we're going to be okay.
Israel has vowed it will respond to Iran.
No! All right, can I have a word with you, Middle East? Over here. Ah, shalom aleichem. Trying to cover all bases. Listen, I hope this doesn't sound patronizing, but when we in the West drew your region's borders and set you up with perfectly functioning dictatorships, we expected a little better. See, the agreement was we would make up a whole new bunch of countries, some of which made sense. And in return, you would give us your delicious oil. That was the deal. You give us your delicious oil, and we take it. We certainly didn't expect to get drawn into all the drama that our actions created. And now, these wars have got us all turned around. At one point, we're helping Iraq fight Iran, and then we're invading Iraq, and now we're helping Iran fight ISIS, and then we're using ISIS to help fight Houthis that are backed by Iran. I mean, you know, in Gaza, we're actually bombing them and feeding them. How do you think that makes us feel? Oh, did you have a nice sandwich? Run! Oh, and apparently now there's two kinds of Islam? I mean, you could have told us that before we got into this. As I said earlier, arbitrarily gerrymandered your homeland, so do better. Keep that oil coming. And by the way, we got enough trouble keeping track of our own wars. Like this weekend, our former president and illustrious historian, Donald J. Trump, spoke near one of America's most hallowed battlefields. And if you thought Lincoln consecrated Gettysburg with his soaring rhetoric, well, buckle up.
Gettysburg, what an unbelievable battle that was. The Battle of Gettysburg, what an unbelievable... I mean, it was so much and so interesting and so vicious and horrible and... so beautiful in so many different ways. It represented such a big portion of the success of this country. Gettysburg, wow.
That is plagiarized almost directly from my seventh grade book report, Gettysburg, Wow. I did not. Is that even my name? It was vicious and horrible and beautiful. Is he talking about a Civil War battle or a horse giving birth? Like, it was bloody, but it's life. Now, obviously, I'm not a Civil War buff, like. But unlike me, he even knows all the famous quotes.
I go to Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, to look and to watch. And the statement of Robert E. Lee, who's no longer in favor. Did you ever notice that? No longer in favor. Never fight uphill, me boys. Never fight uphill. They were fighting uphill. He said, wow, that was a big mistake. He lost his great general. And they were fighting. Never fight uphill, me boys.
It is true. The North did have the higher ground, but I'm pretty sure that Robert E. Lee was not a leprechaun. I never fight uphill, me boys. That's not how to take back the North's pot of gold. You can't be fighting uphill, me boys. Also, minor point, but I'm pretty sure Robert E. Lee would not have told them never fight uphill, since he's the one who told them to f***ing fight uphill. He wasn't like, there they go up the hill. Oh, I'm going to be so mad if they do that. They go up the hill. It was Longstreet actually told them don't go up the hill. But Robert E. Lee said, me boys will do what they want. Although, to be fair to former President Donald Trump, he does have a lot on his mind right now.
Now to breaking news. The first ever criminal trial involving a former president will soon get underway.
Oh, my God, Donald, don't run up that hill, me boy. Stay down. Stay down the hill, me boy. Stay down. Yes, after years of anticipation, the first criminal trial of a former president has begun. And by all accounts, it is absolutely riveting.
40 minutes ago, you wrote an observation that I was very surprised. Trump appears to be sleeping. His head keeps dropping down and his mouth goes slack. Tell us about that.
Well, Jake, he appeared to be asleep.
Hey, Jake. What part of head down, eyes closed, drool coming of his mouth do you not f-ing get over here? He's snoring. He's doing the Hong Shu. He's doing the me, 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 me. There's a piece of paper going up and down and up and down in his mouth. He's asleep. Imagine committing so many crimes, you get bored at your own trial. Move on to the good stuff. Now, in case you've lost track, this is the trial where Trump allegedly paid hush money to an adult film star that he slept with and then allegedly falsified business records to cover it up. Or as Trump would put it.
This is political persecution. This is a persecution like never before. Nobody's ever seen anything like it. And again, it's a case that should have never been brought. It's an assault on America. And that's why I'm very proud to be here.
Well, it's true. Trump is always very proud to be part of any assault on America. Look, even if... Oh. Yes, Mr. Stewart, we agree. Look, even if the prosecution's a bit of a stretch, it's not persecution. The guy's not Nelson Mandela or Jesus.
I don't mind being Nelson Mandela because I'm doing it for a reason.
Trump also shared two articles that compared him to Jesus Christ. One was titled, quote, The Crucifixion of Donald Trump.
I don't let him crucify him, me boy. We had full team coverage down at the courthouse in Lower Manhattan today, here with an update on which martyr Trump more resembles, Jesus or Nelson Mandela. It's Ronnie Chang and Desi Leidick. I'm going to start with Ronnie Chang, Jesus or Mandela?
Clearly Mandela, all right? Both are two heroes unjustly persecuted by a corrupt legal system. And as Mandela often said, and I quote, this is a witch hunt hoax. I've never even met Horseface.
I totally disagree, Ronnie. Jesus Christ. He's obviously Jesus Christ. It's right there in the New Testament, or in its sequel, The Art of the Deal. Chapter 10, verse 8. And lo, he evicted the rent-controlled tenants, and it was good. And tremendous and vicious and beautiful. Jesus, wow.
All right. Hang on. Just think about this for a second, okay? Trump and Mandela, they both had three wives. Yeah? Jesus didn't even have a serious girlfriend, okay? The guy had no riz.
I don't think riz is an appropriate... Anyway, Mandela was in prison for 27 years, Ronnie, so it's...
Yes, but if you add up all the prison sentences Trump got for other people from January 6th and his campaign and his business, it's way more than 27 years, okay? Trump is like 10 Nelson Mandelas.
No, Ronnie, Trump is Jesus. They both have a ton of buildings with their names on them, filled with portraits of themselves to be worshipped. And they both sold sneakers, gold sneakers.
Hold on.
I'm sorry to interrupt. Oh. This is ridiculous, okay?
Josh Johnson, everybody. Also down on the floor.
Trump is not Mandela or Jesus, okay? We all know that Donald Trump is OJ.
I don't think that. Did you say OJ?
Yeah, John. OJ, Trump. They were both iconic celebrities in the 80s. Plus, Donald J. Trump. Is the J for juice? Probably. But most importantly, their obvious guilt didn't deter their loyal fans who either think they're innocent or don't care they're guilty.
Jesus had loyal fans.
Not like this.
So if he's OJ, you're saying that whether or not Trump slept with Stormy Daniels or paid Stormy Daniels hush money, it's not going to matter. He's walking away a free man.
Yes. And personally, I'm excited for the moment in the trial when Trump will drop his pants and say, if the glove don't fit... You must acquit!
Well, John, Ronnie, Jesse, and Josh, everybody. We'll come back with David Sanger. Don't go away. Yeah!
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/news. That's LifeLock.com/news to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Welcome back to The Daily Show. My guest tonight, a White House, a national security correspondent for The New York Times. His latest book is called New Cold Wars, China's Rise, Russia's Invasion, and America's Struggle to Defend the West. Please welcome back to the program, David Sanger. Sir!
Thank you.
New Cold War. David, first of all, thank you. It's nice to see you again.
Good to be here.
Is the premise that the United States did a poor job of managing risk after the fall of the Soviet Union?
Well, we certainly made a lot of false assumptions, bad assumptions.
That doesn't sound
along
like
the way.
No.
Nah, wouldn't be us. Wouldn't be us. And the fundamental argument of the book is that we believed somehow, we deluded ourselves, John, mm-hmm. into believing that China and Russia, each for their own different reasons, would like to sign up to the Western world. That we were going to go say, look, we got this whole thing figured out. All you guys do is come in here and sign on the dotted line.
Right. We're going to do a rules-based democratic foundation order, and everybody will be cool with it.
And that was supposed to be the end of history, because, right?
We were, sure, I remember
the competition was
over. Francis Fukuyama said, it's the end of history. Western liberalism is triumphant, and we can all just skate on the glorious booty that we get from it.
Right. Now, you can't blame just him, because there were a lot of other people who believed
just him.
Okay. And I signed on to a little bit of this myself, so I confess. But I got to tell you, this basically went on for 30 years, good 25 anyway, because we were busy doing the wars on terror. You were just talking about those a little while ago.
Well, you talk about in the book, there's a lot of stories of how George Bush thought that there would be a great rapprochement with Putin over their shared dislike of terrorism. And the two of them, I mean, there's stories in there that come out of James Bond. You're on a yacht with George Bush and Putin, and they've just seen a very dark version of the Nutcracker. You're like, it's not even the regular Nutcracker. It's the dark Nutcracker. And you're like,
I bet Bush really enjoyed that.
I'm sure he loves anything high.
So, this was 2002. We were in St. Petersburg. We were floating down the Neva River. They're in a great party boat. There's this guy surfing.
Wait, you were floating down the river with them?
I was floating down in the boat behind it. We weren't even.
What are you, like, tubing? They're in a yacht?
That's what White House reporters do, isn't it? We were in the pool. It's just this time the pool was a river.
All right.
Right, okay. So we're following him down, and there's this guy serving dinner. He's kind of big and hulking. It turns out it's Prigozhin. Okay.
Yevgeny Prigozhin, the head of the terrible army.
Well, at the time, he was Private Putin's army chef. Okay. His only job was make sure the meals were good. And he had a really glowering look.
Wait. So he's like Bobby Flay. And then he turns into the head of a mercenary army.
Well, before he did that, he ran the Internet Research Agency and tried to fix the 2016 election with disinformation.
You know, they really are Renaissance men.
They are.
It really is.
I mean, that's talent.
That's talent.
That's talent.
So now this appears to be going along until George Bush wants them to go after Islamic terrorism. And then at that point, Putin wants them to go after Chechnya.
Right, or at least Putin wants to use the excuse to go after Chechnya. And that was the beginning of Bush beginning to think, you know, maybe this guy isn't the one we thought he was.
He looked into his soul.
Yeah, well, you know, he may have looked at the wrong soul. So in 2007, Putin shows up at this thing called the Munich Security Conference. And he says, you know, there are parts of Russia that have been separated from us that really belong to us, to the Russia that Peter the Great created. And remember, Putin isn't trying to recreate the Soviet Union. He thinks the guys who ran the Soviet Union were idiots.
Right.
You go into his office, he's got a big bust of Peter the Great there. So who do you think he thinks he is?
Prigozhin. No.
Yeah.
Peter the Great. How do we miss all of this? And even if we had been onto it, what would we have done differently?
So first, it was a combination of sort of bad intelligence, wishful thinking. Oh, sure, he's going to be troublesome. But at the end of the day, he cares about his oil exports, his gas exports, more than he really cares about this. And look, up until the weekend before the invasion happened, there's a story.
Of Crimea.
The invasion of
Ukraine.
Of Ukraine.
Okay.
In 2022.
So this is all past 2014.
Yeah, 2014 comes. He takes Crimea. Obama says, I'm not going to war for something that used to belong to Russia. Nobody does sanctions for a year, right? And the next year, the Chancellor of Germany, Angela Merkel, signs the Nord Stream 2 agreement. It creates this pipeline that runs from Russia around Ukraine, so it doesn't get any revenue from it, and straight into Europe. And he says, she says, you know, Putin's a reliable supplier.
He's realistic.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Reasonable assumption, maybe, because he really hadn't cut off gas supplies. So what happens next? 7 years later, he goes after full-on Ukraine. The U.S. reveals the intelligence starting in the late fall. They get this remarkable intelligence. Mm-hmm. They send Bill Burns, the CIA director, who used to be ambassador to Russia, to say, this would be a really bad idea. Putin says, oh, I'm not doing anything. And the weekend before, everybody's back in Munich, and there are a bunch of Europeans saying to me and everybody else, oh, he's not really going to invade. He's just bluffing. He wouldn't risk his oil revenues. 4 days later, he invades. I mean, the intelligence chief for Germany was in Kyiv the morning of the invasion. They had to evacuate him because he didn't believe they would invade.
So what did he think that noise was?
He got out of town kind of fast.
So this is all hindsight, though. In truth, what could we other... When someone is imperialistic in that way, what can other powers do short of an actual shooting war to prevent these kinds of things? There's no guarantee that tougher sanctions after Crimea would have deterred him. It sounds like this is kind of his destiny, and he's fulfilling that destiny come hell or high water.
So that's the other piece of this, which is we impose our values on Russia, China, and we think, well, we're not going to do something that would get in the way of our economic interests. Neither would they. So China's a really interesting example. Xi Jinping comes in more than 10 years ago. Joe Biden spent a lot of time with him, traveled around with him. But the intelligence reports about Xi are, this guy's not going to challenge the West. He's going to tend to his economy, make sure all is good, right? We now discover, and you read about in the book, there are these secret speeches that he gave almost as soon as he came into office saying, we're going to build up our nuclear forces to the size of the Russians and the Americans. We're going to make sure that we take our claims in the South China Sea. Mm-hmm. I was out on the in the Rose Garden of the White House when Xi came to visit and promised everybody he wasn't going to militarize these islands they're building in the South China Sea. A year or two later, you look on satellite photographs, there are fighter jets showing up on the islands. Kind of looks like militarization.
Well, that's just convenience.
Yeah.
That's not. Are we lying to them or are we lying to ourselves?
I think more to ourselves. So, you know, we did not want to conceive of a world in which we were back in superpower conflict. We wanted to live in the world in which the U.S. was the predominant power. We finally calmed down the Middle East. We're doing real well with that. And that we could focus on competing with China, some containment of Russia. And, you know, Biden happened to be the one sitting in office when this all fell apart. And most of the book is a story of what happens when that fell apart. It's the story of how the Zaporizhia nuclear plant in Ukraine, the biggest nuclear plant in Europe, suddenly everybody's afraid is going to become the world's biggest
dirty
bomb.
Yes,
yeah, right. And there's an amazing story right from New York City 2 years ago, October of 2022. When President Biden shows up at a fundraiser at James Murdoch's house, they're nice New Yorkers.
Not familiar with the last name, but go ahead.
Yeah. He's actually sort of the black sheep of the family.
No,
he's the Democrat who raises money for Biden, among others. So they're, you know, nice New Yorkers walking around with their wine, looking at his art collection. The president comes in and says, by the way, we're going through something that is the closest to nuclear war we've had since the Cuban Missile Crisis. They're all looking at each other like...
He drops that at a cocktail party?
I'm sure they all thought that it was really the moment to get out to the Hamptons, don't you think?
He drops that and then is like, do you guys have brie? Like, yeah. What? That?
He does. Actually, people in the White House were amazed. They now call it his Armageddon speech because he had just said the same thing in the Oval Office.
Right. Then did he turn to everybody and go, and my word is don't. That's his big thing now. He tells dictators, don't.
Don't.
And they're like, ooh, okay. Haven't we sowed the seeds of this with our own arrogance and cavalier approach to a lot of these foreign policy conflicts. A, we always frame things as this is a battle between democracy and the free world and liberation and authoritarianism. But the truth is, we're fighting for trade channels and resources. Like, this is all a function of competing capitalist powers. And aren't we the ones? I mean, we've invaded more countries than Russia and China combined. So how do we give ourselves somehow the pass as the white hat guys when a lot of our policy has created a lot of the chaos that they're taking advantage of? I'm done. I'm out of here.
So there's been a lot of that going on in American history for a long time. Teddy Roosevelt, you know, took over his fair share of territory. But I think in the Biden administration, we've had to sort of face these contradictions, because at the beginning of the administration, the president was saying just what you said. This is a battle between democracy and autocracy. And everyone said, OK, that's pretty clean. Then he goes to
Just not true.
Yeah. Then he goes to Saudi Arabia, does the fist bump with MBS, right? And I was on that trip. They weren't quite sure how that
was. Are you ever home?
No. When you cover the White House, you got to go where the president goes. It's part of the job. And then we move on to what's been happening in Israel and the Israel-Hamas war. And as you said earlier, we are in the very odd position of both providing aid and providing the arms that are being dropped on Gaza. And I think this administration has had the hardest time trying to go right that. And obviously it's causing a lot of pain, not only for Gazans, but for people in the administration who are having a hard time living with it.
Would it simplify our position if we stopped pretending our morals were beyond the reproach of all these other countries? Would it help us to not have to scold everybody for failing to live up to principles that we very clearly do not uphold?
Well, at least we have some principles, okay? That's the one thing
that
should be said.
But we say that, but, you know, you can't invade a country. What happened in Iraq?
That's right.
You can't call for regime change. What did we do in Libya? Every time we say these things, we undercut our own position with, I mean, for God's sakes, Iran is an enemy today because we overthrew their democratically elected government in 1953.
That's right.
So at what point do we just admit that this is how we're behaving?
The odd thing is, at the moment that presidents do admit that, they get chewed up for admitting to American error. Obama went and apologized to the Iranians.
I'm not saying apologize. I'm just saying, like, take off the mask and go, you know what this is? It strikes me as it's colonialism and imperialism in a more modern form. China is in Africa trying to extract. Right. We're trying to extract. We're militarizing economic rivalries and creating all kinds of chaos and death over what is ostensibly trying to get better deals.
Well, some of it's better deals. Some of it is protecting technology. And I argue in here that with China, as opposed to Russia, this is, first of all, this is an incredible competitor. And it's a competitor in the military sphere, in the technology sphere, in finance,
right,
in economics.
And we're their best customer.
And they are ours.
Right.
And that's really what makes this different from the old Cold War. So a reason there's new in new Cold Wars, and there's a reason there's an S at the end. First of all, we're fighting two simultaneously. Okay. The old Cold War, that wasn't the case.
Is fighting the wrong terminology, because isn't that, look, the only people that never lose a war are the military-industrial complex, are the people that sell the weapons. And if we continue to, if we continue to push that, you know, weaponization of these economic rivalries, aren't we just playing into that cycle?
We are playing into the cycle, but if you're in a world in which vacuums happen, if we say, okay, we're done with this, you're going to go back and build our big walls and sort of recede from it, someone fills that space. And that space is going to get filled largely by China, some by Russia, some by other authoritarian regimes. And so we've got to make a really hard and bad choice, which is,
right,
do we want to be the one trying to to fill that void with our technology and our principles, understanding that we violate them all the time? Or do we want to let an authoritarian regime go fill that space, which we know how that's going to look?
It seems like what we should do is be honest about what our aims are, in the way that China went into Africa and did Belt and Road, knowing that really it's about cobalt and lithium. And rather than us going into Africa and just building up all these small military juntas that end up creating all those dictatorships that create so much chaos and pain for those countries.
Well, I'd argue that now we're not doing it with cobalt. We're doing it with semiconductors, right?
So
the big story that we tell in here, went to Taiwan, spent a lot of time at Taiwan Semiconductor, which is the biggest producer of the most advanced semiconductors in the world. And, you know, looked at the question, does that create a silicon shield for the United States and for Taiwan? In other words, that the Chinese would not dare take over Taiwan because they would lose access to Taiwan Semiconductor.
When are we going to learn any sentence that begins with, would they dare? Yes, they would dare, and so would we.
And so my argument here is, it's a silicon shield for a little while, John, but eventually the Chinese are going to learn how to make everything Taiwan Semiconductor is making. And at that moment, we've got a real Taiwan crisis. And so the book is sort of a warning ahead to what these next 20 or 30 years are going to look like.
Because
this is not a world in which these new Cold Wars are going to end sometime soon. They are going to be the dominant theme of the next 20, 30, 40 years, long after Putin and Xi are gone, and long after Joe Biden and Donald Trump are gone.
I don't believe that last part.
That Trump's never leaving?
I think the two of them, honestly, it'll be like 2084. And they'll be like, it's another Biden-Trump rematch. I can't believe it. Two heads in a jar. New Cold Wars. It is available now. David Sanger. Thank you.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high-rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
Before we go, we check in with your host for the rest of the week, Dulce Sloan. Dulce!
Hello!
Dulce, excited for you to host the week. What are we going to be looking at?
John, I'll be continuing our coverage of the Trump trial, unless someone has the money to keep me quiet.
Are you asking for Donald Trump to pay you hush money?
No, that broke bitch can't even pay his own bond. I'm looking for the real players. I'm asking the Republican Party to pay me hush money.
Well, that's a fair point. Dulce Sloan all this week.
Here it is. We did it.
Let me say it again. More sheep is not going to solve the wolf problem. My advice to the president today, for what it's worth, Mr. President, don't. Stop it. Support Israel. With respect, go to Amazon and buy a spine online.
Explore more shows from the Daily Show podcast universe by searching The Daily Show, wherever you get your podcasts. Watch The Daily Show weeknights at 11, 10 Central on Comedy Central, and stream full episodes anytime on Paramount Plus.
This has been a Comedy Central podcast.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.